Blog Talk Radio.
Chapter 6, Feeling Lucky by Daniel Blanchard, educator, author, speaker, and coach.
That little things do matter. You know, today, let's talk about the Olympic stars, the people that we're watching every night on television, winning gold medals. Let's talk about how they train. They started training when they were in the cradle. Yeah, that's hard to believe, isn't it? Let me ask you, have you ever heard a story that, a really, really good story that actually changed your life? Would you like to learn how to tell your own stories? Have you ever wanted to bypass your conscious? Can you imagine connecting with your inner soul? Tell me, do you know what a neocortex is? I don't. We'll find out today. Our guest today grew up as a student athlete. However, he admits that he was more of an athlete than a student. Today, he has successfully completed 12 years of college, and he has earned 7 degrees. This success coach is an educator, author, speaker, and coach. He teaches in Connecticut's largest inner school, high school. He has written articles for the United States' oldest newspaper, the Hartford Courant. In addition, this expert has written and traditionally published his team leadership book called Feeling Lucky. He is a teacher consultant for the National Writing Project. It is with great pleasure that we welcome back to the show today, Daniel Blanchard. Hi, Dan. How are you doing today?
Oh, wonderful, January. Thank you.
You know, I neglected to mention that you are now a football coach, and that is such an exciting thing to be doing. And I want to connect it with watching the Olympics this year. How old are the kids that you're coaching?
I'm actually on round two right now of coaching. I did quite a few years coaching the older kids as a younger man. And now as I'm moving into middle age, I have my kids now coming through the sports system, and I'm coaching my boy Dakota, who's 8 years old, and the football team I'm coaching is the 8 and 9 year olds. And I was told when I was an earlier, younger coach, that this would be a very fun time in life when round two comes around and you're coaching your own kids. And they were definitely right. You know, here I am coaching my own kids, and it's a blast.
Oh, wonderful. That's great. You know, you wrote a wonderful learning activity at Successimo entitled Little Things Do Matter. And I read your article. It was fabulous. And then I kept thinking about it as I was watching the Olympics today. Tell us how an Olympic athlete starts training.
Okay, though, generally, the little things that matter is so important on so many different layers. For one, any one of these athletes you see, most of them, you know, don't get a late start. Most of them start when they're little, kids, younger than my son, who's 8 years old right now. Many of them are much littler, and you wouldn't, you know, you kind of look at it and wouldn't expect what's going to grow out of that to be some kind of Olympian. But it's possible. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like when an oak acorn's laying on the ground, and it's going to, you know, someday grow up to be a huge oak tree. And that's what these little kids are. There's so many of them playing off their sports. And any one of them can flourish into an Olympian. I mean, we don't know which ones they're going to be. But if we, you know, if we're tender and we take care of them and we guide them and we give them our help and, you know, we do everything we can do to bring them along, give them the best of ourselves, you never know which one you'll be sitting there watching on TV someday and saying, wow, that kid was on my, you know, basketball team. Or I was that kid's football coach or sprinting coach or whatever it may be, wrestler coach, whatever it may be. So in that layer, little things do matter. Now, in a different layer, I haven't gotten to see the indoor cycling yet.
Uh-huh.
But I do remember a story I was actually listening to many years ago, and they were saying that, you know, the difference between first place and 10th place on the indoor cycling between, you know, a gold medal, first
uh-huh.
place, and 10th place, which kind of seems like it's far out, the difference between those is 1/4 of a turn of your socket.
Oh,
That's incredible. 1/4 of a turn of the pedal is the difference between first place, a gold medal, and 10th place.
Oh, that's amazing.
Now, those are just the little teeny things that matter. Obviously, the Olympic athletes and anybody who's successful in life is better at it than the rest of us of getting the little things correct.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems is, you know, obviously, you know, little things are easy to do. And because little things are easy to do, they're also easy not to do, which kind of makes them hard to do because they're easy not to do. They're easy to disregard. You say, oh, it's not that important, I'll just do this. The Olympic athletes don't do that. Real successful people don't do that. They pay attention to the details and the little things because little things matter.
And, you know, it was interesting in the article, you asked the question, have you ever seen a little baby say that he or she was going to take tomorrow off from trying to learn how to walk?
That's true.
I love that.
Enthusiasm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's enthusiasm. Well, you know, no matter how many times those little babies fall down, they get right back up, they go for it again, they never take tomorrow off. They never seem discouraged. I think as adults can learn a lot from them. I mean, somewhere along the way, we tend to lose that enthusiasm for learning and adventure and risk and gain. We tend to play life much safer. Maybe we tend to get a little lazier, maybe a little more comfortable. You know, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, the babies, they do these little teeny things, just a little bit of a gain every day, and they don't care. They don't care if they fall down, and they don't care if someone makes noise about them falling down. Us adults, if we fall down, we care when people make noise about us falling down. Mm-hmm. And then we don't want to get back up again and fall down again. So we tend to shy away
from that.
So, I think there's big lessons in little kids.
Oh, yeah. And they learn to crawl, walk, and eventually they run, but they do it in their time.
and
it's a marvelous process to watch. And I am sure there are so many coaches and mentors watching these events and thinking, oh, I knew that person when they were a little somebody just starting out. How wonderful. I've really enjoyed this week. You know, Dan, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsor. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about your website and how people can get your books. Also, when we come back, we're going to talk about how everyone loves a good story with Daniel Blanchard. Daniel, would you share now your website information and where people can get your books?
Oh, absolutely. The website is Granddaddy's, with an S at the end, Secrets. So there's two S's there, Granddaddy's Secrets. So www.granddaddyssecrets.com is the website. There's a bunch of information on there about me, some of the things I've been doing. It's got both of my books on there. You can order the book right off of the website. You can order the book off of Amazon, or you can go to any of the big bookstores, you know, Borders, Barnes & Noble, any of those places. And, of course, through my publisher, Publish America, you can order the book as well. So it's pretty easy to get. It's available all over.
Okay. And the first book is Feeling Lucky, and your second book is?
It's called Feeling Good. And the third book, which will complete the trilogy, will be coming out sometime this school year, which is called Feeling Strong. And what it is, it's a fictional story about a teen that starts off in 10th grade, struggling, you know, living in a rough home, rough neighborhood, going to a rough school. And somehow, somehow the world hasn't jaded this boy yet or stolen his smile yet, but it's slowly getting to him, and he's fighting it. And what happens is his estranged granddaddy comes out of nowhere, and his granddaddy was this World War II fighter pilot that fought in World War II against Hitler, and very, very successful man, but he's never been around. He's estranged. The boy's father doesn't get along with the grandfather, so he's just never along. But he comes into the boy's life momentarily and plants a seed. Tells him what leadership is really about. Not the stuff you see on TV. Not the stuff you're seeing from your friends in the neighborhood. Tells the boy what it really means to be, a grown-up or a man. And as well, and once again, not this Hollywood stuff. So he plants all these seeds of greatness and these seeds and bits of wisdom on leadership, and then the granddaddy disappears. It's crazy. Just like puff, gone. Just like a puff of smoke, and the boy's like, where did he go? So that's the end of book one, and book two. The boy's looking for his granddaddy, and he has. Slowly over the last year, I was in 11th grade, ingested some of the wisdom and leadership secrets that his granddaddy gave him. And he's out with his girlfriend, looking around, when he's talking, he's sounding like his granddaddy. The transformation's beginning. The book that will come out during the next school year will be the 12th grade story. And it's going to be another great book. I really suggest and would love for people to go and get the books. I think it could change their life. I've been getting emails from all over the world saying that, this story is my story.
Okay.
Is what I've heard. This story brought tears to my eyes because I connected so deeply with it. And I had one person contact me and say, after reading your story, I reconnected with my estranged father.
Wow.
And now we're on a talking basis again.
Are these books your story, or is this a fictional story that you've created?
It's a fictional story I've created, but as all authors know, you can only write what you know about. So some of this story is my story. Some of the story is people that I've known over the years. Then a little bit of fiction, a little bit of drawing it out a little bit, making them a little more excited. And all that. But basically, all good writing is like autobiography. You can't write about what you don't know about, whether it's yourself or whether it's somebody else who explained it to you or you saw it. So it's been a great story, going through the books.
When your third book comes out, I definitely want to have you on the show so we can promote it and share it with our listeners. You wrote a fabulous article, and everybody loves a good story, and we've just enjoyed hearing you tell this story. Could you explain the process that happens to us when we hear a good story? What happens in our brain, and how does it get assimilated into our subconscious?
Absolutely. I'll have to get right on that, but if you don't mind, I'd like to pause for one second. Just to let people know, I do have a blog that's on my website that's been great. I get a lot of activity there. I also have a weekly column that's in a couple different newspapers called Granddaddy's Secret. And I just came out in the latest graduate-level college textbook for teacher preparation programs across the U.S. and teaching in the middle and secondary schools, 10th edition. So I'm in that as well. So now going into your good story, it's kind of like my books. My books are a great story. And what they do is, it's an age-old tradition. We can all the way back to Homer with his storytelling. It's one of the best ways to teach. And I think anybody who doesn't know the magic of storytelling should investigate it. Because it's one of the best ways to teach, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a coach, whether you're a parent, whether you're a guidance counselor. It doesn't matter who you are. If you're talking to anybody and you want to relay some important information to them, storytelling is one of the most powerful ways to do it. Now, unfortunately, some people think, it takes too long. I'd rather just tell them straight out. I don't have time for any of this, Pollyannish, good feel-good stuff. And it's sad that sometimes our society feels like that. Because what happens is you lose quite a bit when you just, I have to get directly to the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I'm not going to do any of that feel-good stuff. You lose out on quite a lot of the message. Because what happens is, I mean, we're humans. You know, we're imperfect. There's nothing perfect about us humans. You know, we don't be perfect if we were like a god, and we're not. So what did us humans create? Us humans created a language, which means language is imperfect. Language cannot communicate every single thing accurately that we want to communicate. I mean, there's not even words out there for some of the things that we want to communicate. In my book, I talk about the word candy, C-A-N-D-I, which means constant and never-ending deliberate improvement.
Uh-huh.
And that comes from the word kaizen, which is a Japanese word, which means, you know, constant improvement. There's not even an American word for that. Just a you know, small example. So now what happens is when you use just words, you get to what's called, you know, the second brain or the neocortex. And
okay.
If you don't mind, I'll just go into a brief explanation of this.
Yes.
Way, 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 way back, you know, kind of like caveman days.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, we had smaller skulls and smaller brains, and we had what some people would call the first brain. You had the spinal cord that came into, you know, your head, and then there was a little teeny bump at the end of that spinal cord. Some people call it the first brain.
Uh-huh.
Some people call it the limbic brain.
Okay.
You know, whatever it was an animal that survived on instincts.
Okay.
Instincts and emotion ruled us, you know, and kept our species alive,
yeah.
You know, for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years, kept us alive. And slowly as we, you know, we learned, you know, the little things like using our fingers correctly, our opposing thumb, the standing up, using tools.
Uh-huh.
As we got better and better as a species, our brain enlarged and it became a second brain over the first brain, or what's called a neocortex. Over the limbic brain, and that started becoming like a thinking brain.
Okay.
Now, it's evolved so much over the last hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years. It's evolved so much into like an intellectual thing that you're almost considered to be like weak if you're not like speaking intellectually or asking intellectually. You're almost considered to be like not as good.
Okay.
And what happens is, in this world, in this present time, you have to use both. You have to use your intellectual abilities from your second mind, from your neocortex, and you also still have to use instinct, or some people might call it insight, or your emotions, to survive and get by in this world and be successful. So that's what storytelling does. Storytelling penetrates that overlap in second brain, or that neocortex, and it goes down into like your emotions. And it goes down into, like, your instinct or, you know, maybe your insight.
Yeah.
And if you're not storytelling, if you're not using stories, you're missing, you know, that deep part of your brain that could help you become successful. So that's one of the reasons why storytelling is so good. And when I was going to write my book, there was no doubt, not for a second, that I hesitate, wondering what format my first book would be in.
Uh-huh,
I mean, it was a given to me. It was obvious. Now, my first book being a story, because everybody loves a story, and they're effective, and they work. Even if we can't fully explain why they work, because words aren't perfect, and language is not perfect, but they work.
And this is called the limbic area of your brain, and it's conducive to insight, instinct, and faith, and it is without language abilities. So it's just that inner, I'd say it's your inner soul. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some people say it's a gut feeling.
A gut,
you know,
yeah.
It could be like, yeah, it could be like an inner soul. I mean, I remember one story of a mother that was in work one day, and she called up her daughter, and she said, listen, do me a favor. On the way home from work today, she goes, stop in, you know, a gas station garage and ask the mechanic to take a look at the front right tire, the passenger tire.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter was like, why? And the mother's like, I'm not sure. And the daughter's like, really, Mom? Come on. I'm in a hurry. I didn't got time to just stop. And she's like, the mother's like, please, just do it. I can't explain why, but just do it.
Do it.
And the daughter, you know, did it because her mother hounded her. And the whole daughter was mumbling and grumbling the whole time, going, why am I doing this? It's crazy. She stops at the gas station, has a mechanic come up and look at the tire, and the mechanic says, wow, you would have never made it home. That tire was about to blow, and it could have caused you an accident.
Oh, my God.
And how did the mother know that?
Yeah.
She knew that because her subconscious mind or her limbic mind or her first brain, there were a lot of different names for it, saw it. I mean, it picked up that information. And even though it couldn't be expressed in language or communication, it was like that gut feeling, that insightful feeling. Something is wrong.
Well,
I don't know what it is.
You know, Daniel, my gut feeling is I definitely want to have you back on the show, and we'll look forward to sharing more of your wonderful stories with our listeners, and we'll schedule you for a fall show for sure, and we'll look forward to having you back.
Well, thank you, Daniel. I always enjoy speaking with you and being on your show.
We love having you, and your interviews always get such a good response.
Daniel Blanchard's website is www.granddaddysecrets.com. GrandDaddySecrets.com.